I'm Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. We're going to talk about feet. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. If doctors check on your heart, your hearing, weight, and more in a yearly physical, what about your feet? Our feet have 52 bones between them and absorb actual tons of pressure. The newest research is showing that foot problems often lead to knee and hip replacements. We're casual about our feet, but obsessed with them at the same time. We tolerate lots of foot pain, yet we want to be comfortable and stylish. So we have a lot of questions for our guests. Should we be buying shoes that are marketed as being specifically constructed for comfort? What about flip-flops and clogs? Which running shoes or walking shoes? What about women who are resorting to cosmetic foot surgery to fit into high-end high heels? Well, that is happening. And as my guest is going to explain, this is not an urban myth. And how do you know when you should have actual surgery on your feet? Can your issues be fixed without it? My guest is New York City foot specialist Dr. Rock Positano. Rock is something of a rock star in the foot doctor world. In his New York City waiting room, you're likely to see professional athletes, professionals who are on their feet a lot, and those who have been told there is no answer for their foot problems except surgery. Dr. Positano, however, has a practice devoted to finding solutions without surgery, if at all possible. He has co-authored and edited a medical textbook on a treatment of the foot, and his New York City office is called the Non-Surgical Foot and Ankle Service at New York Presbyterian Hospital. Rock, welcome to the show.
Faye, thanks so much for having me. What a nice way to start off the year 2015.
Yeah, for me too. So have you eaten at Rao's lately?
Yeah, I was... Actually, yes. I was up there a few weeks ago, and we had a good time, and we all bought our Lipitor and our Crestor after we had our dinner.
I know. What did you get? Do you get the same thing every time?
Well, you know what? They have everything there. They have very regional, southern Italian cuisine. You know, they have meatballs, and they have chicken, and they got pasta. They got all the great stuff that our cardiologist friends and our internal medicine friends tell us not to eat on a daily basis.
All right. Let's get to the story that is so shocking, because... you're the one who pointed out to me quite some time ago that women were calling you up and saying that they were going to have this surgery on their feet, cosmetic surgery, so they could fit into these high-end high heels. And I remember my jaw falling open when you told me this. And they also then come to you for help once this surgery has happened. And why? What goes on when they have the surgery?
Well, what they realize, Faith, is that, the foot is a very important part of a person's body for obvious reasons. I mean, a foot and ankle problem in and of itself is not life-threatening, but it's lifestyle-threatening. And what happens is that you take a part of the body that is probably the most abused part of your body, that has to absorb 15,000 to 20,000 steps a day, that has to support the whole body's superstructure, mainly the knee, the hip, the back, the shoulders, the skull. And what happens is that it's a very, very, very interesting relationship in which when you interfere with anything that makes the body make contact with the ground in a more efficient way, you always run the risk of, number one, developing other types of foot problems, but also developing problems above the foot and the ankle, which is a lot of things that we see here. Now, I think the important thing to remember is that, we sometimes take for granted our ability to take a walk around the block or walk around the park or because of the fact that our feet are, for the most part, relatively healthy. But all it takes is one bad experience, and patients come in, they say, I never realized how important my feet were until I had to walk to the corner store, and I was limping the whole way.
Yeah, and so many things can affect the feet. I remember you telling me a story about people who had taken a certain antibiotic being extremely sensitive on the foot, on the bottom of the foot, where if you just touched it with your thumb or your finger, they would scream out in pain. It's so sensitive. And you said that this was being talked about in medical circles as being related, a side effect of these antibiotics.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing about this is that, like anything else, I mean, you have to look at the benefit to risk ratio. If someone has a severe lung infection, the medications that you're speaking about, Faith, are called fluoroquinolones, which means Cipro and Levaquin. And they've been shown in certain people to cause a problem with the tendons, particularly the Achilles tendon or the plantar fascia. But again, the funny thing about this is that, you know, there is no part of the body that really shows a systemic disease manifestation better than the foot or the ankle. And interestingly, you know, one of the funny things we speak about is, you know, often when you go for your internal medicine exam, you know, the doctor will say, take off everything but your shoes and socks.
But yeah.
Whereas, you know, a lot of things first manifest itself in the foot, a lot of systemic disease problems, actually. And actually, we're presently at the Hospital for Special Surgery working on a collaborative work with Harvard Medical School looking at how systemic disease manifestations often will first occur in the foot and the ankle.
Like what? What would be an example of
that? Well, I mean, things, for instance, hypertension-wise, cardiovascular-wise, you may check a person's pulse in their foot and their ankle. They may have bounding pulses. They may have irregular pulses. So one of the things we always check is we check to see whether or not all of the systems are in check when you're looking at a person's foot and the ankle. Because remember, the foot and the ankle have all of the components of the body. It has a circulatory system in arteries and veins. It has a nerve system in nerves. It has bones. It has ligaments. It has skin. All of the major components of the human body can be found in your 2 feet. So it's really kind of interesting how we've been trying to raise the awareness of why foot health is so important, which is why, you know, podiatrists serve such an important function in terms of helping to sometimes bring a person into the healthcare system who may not know that they had a health problem. But, you know, Faith, interestingly, a painful heel or a painful Achilles, or a painful big toe will bring a person to the doctor's office sometimes a lot quicker than someone who's having shortness of breath, who is having shoulder pain or chest pain. So in that respect, because the fact that the foot does play in on the quality of life, will often bring a person into the healthcare system that maybe would not have come in.
Well, isn't, Rock, the reverse true also? I'm surprised at myself how much foot pain I will tolerate. I mean, I think we all, just if you have a sore feet from walking or whatever it might be, you just kind of let it sit there. And you think, oh, well, that'll get better, or I'll put my feet up, or I'll, soak my feet in a hot bath. And it's different from anything else. I mean, if your hand was hurting you that much, you'd say, I better get this checked.
Well, again, it has a lot to do with people's behavior. Like in a very active athletic population, which we tend to find in a lot of the cities and towns around the Northeast, obviously. I mean, people do rely on exercise as a form of stress reduction and also as a form of staying healthy. And the one thing they do notice is that if their foot becomes an issue, it really does impede their ability to exercise and to do the things that they like to do. So in that respect, I think it's important because, you know, foot and ankle health really is a really good indicator, as well as an ability to bring someone in, again, into the healthcare system to be examined. Now, for instance, you know, when someone comes to me with heel pain or an Achilles pain, I'm just not looking at the heel and the Achilles. I mean, there's a body attached to that foot. It's very important that you do a history, that you find out what's going on, because often, as I had said before, you know, foot manifestations occur where, you know, another type of a problem like rheumatoid arthritis or nerve impingement from the lower back can sometimes manifest itself in the foot and the ankle first. So I think it's important to realize that when we examine a patient who has foot and ankle problems, we always have to look at the big picture because, again, there is a body attached to that foot and ankle.
Well, to get back to the heel pain, plantar fasciitis, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, you are.
So is that what is that a symptom of? What causes that? Is that genetic? Is it caused by a certain injury? Does it have to do with weight gain or all three?
Well, you know, there are many factors, Faith. That's a really good question. I mean, there's biomechanical factors, meaning the way the body makes contact with the ground. If a person has a high arch or a flat arch, they tend to not have the same shock-absorbing capability that a normal arch would be. And what happens often is that the plantar fascia, which is responsible for shock absorption in the heel, becomes overworked and overused, and people can develop an inflammation. There's another manifestation, a systemic manifestation. For instance, people who have psoriatic arthritis, or if they have rheumatoid arthritis, or if they have what they call seronegative arthritis, which means arthritis that doesn't normally show up in the blood work. Often they'll present with pain inside the both heels as well as both Achilles. Then, of course, the third thing is actual trauma, you know, where we find that when a person overdoes something, if they are suddenly increasing their activity level, they tend to overuse that injury. But one of the problems that I find with plantar fasciitis, particularly at this practice at the Hospital for Special Surgery, is that quite often a person will come in thinking they were being treated for plantar fasciitis when indeed they have something else, which is a bigger problem. You know, people read the New York Times, they'll read this, they'll read that, they'll say, read about this new stretch. But the bottom line is that one of the things that we find here, and actually we're publishing a paper on this in a few months, is that quite often a person who has heel pain does not have plantar fasciitis. They may have a tear in the plantar fascia. They may have something called a plantar fibroma, which is a fatty cyst. And the only way to really ascertain that is to use a diagnostic ultrasound, which actually gives excellent visual imaging of that heel.
Yeah, now, I just want to say that I'm an example of this. This is how I met Rock Positano and got to know him. I had a tremendous heel pain, and you sent me over for an ultrasound, thank heavens. And I guess they called your office from the X-ray place, and they said, we don't even know how she's walking back to your office, because I had a big tear in my heel. That's what taught me how much pain we're willing to tolerate.
To endure.
Yeah. So tell me about this issue of as people get older, the fat pad on the heel starts to lessen, but the foot also ages.
Yes, the foot like anything else changes, and when people mature, their angle and base of gait change, which means our ability to walk erect, our ability to balance changes. And, of course, with any type of maturity, you're always going to have some type of wearing away or atrophy of the fat pad in the heel as well as in the front part of the foot. And, you know, one of the things you got to be careful with is that, you know, there are some people who are now using collagen injections to inject fat pads into your heels. And, I mean, it's kind of crazy.
Really?
I see this a lot, unfortunately. And quite often what will happen is that, you know, an injection of this type of a material into those areas can sometimes actually cause scar tissue, which can actually lead to bigger and more serious problems. So I think it's important that people be careful with fads. I mean, fads are dangerous only in cases where a person may have an underlying problem that really requires more of a thorough investigation and a thorough treatment regimen. So you have to be very careful with that. Now, you know, I know you and I have spoke about the surgery aspect of things. Well, you know, foot and ankle surgery, when it's indicated, works. All right, that's the key, indicated. You know, if a person has not tried conservative remedies, whether it be physical therapy, whether it be prescription orthoses, whether it be stretching, I think it's important that you don't go from 0 to 100 when you first have a problem with one of your issues, particularly your foot or your ankle. And I think what we find is that most people, I know in this practice, 90% of the patients that we treat successfully to the point where they do not need an operation.
Yeah.
Now, this is the other thing, that 10% that does not respond when they do need the operation, Faith, I must tell you, they 99% of the time they will do unbelievably well, because guess why? They needed the operation. So I think what people have to realize, you know, people have asked me about foot and ankle surgery, and I've told them I'd rather have my hip replaced before I have my foot operated on.
Why? Why?
Well, because hip replacement, it's a different type of a joint. It works differently than the foot and the ankle, and the results I know here at Special Surgery, our joint replacement division, their knee surgery and their hip surgery replacements are unbelievably well-received with excellent success rates, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the important thing to remember is that, you know, when you're dealing with a body part, You can see an absolutely textbook perfect done surgery on the foot. I mean, I've seen it where the alignment is perfect and the surgeon did a wonderful job. But remember, it's weight bearing. So no matter how good a job you do, you never quite know how that foot is going to respond to weight bearing.
Right, plus 52 bones in those 2 feet and all that pressure.
Yeah, almost over a third of all the bones in the body are in your 2 feet. So again, I must say that, you know, many of our colleagues do wonderful work. I mean, they do precision surgeries. They do the alignments are perfect, but again, What people have to consider is the weight-bearing nature. Weight-bearing is basically the one factor that sort of factors everything else out.
All right. Stay where you are, Rock Positano. We're going to come right back to you. We're going to take a short break and then talk about over-the-counter orthotics. Are they any good? These shoes that are so-called built for comfort or low heels, whatever it is. We're going to get into all of that right here on the show. We'll be back. I'm Faith Middleton with New York City foot doctor Rock Positano on the phone. He is affiliated with New York Presbyterian Hospital, and his office is called the Non-Surgical Foot and Ankle Service. Okay, Rock, I'm going to whip through some topics, so let's just blast through these as fast as we can because there's so much to get to here. Is that a deal?
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's go to... before we get to professional orthotics that are custom fitted, let's do the over-the-counter orthotics. Are those any good?
Again, if a person does not have a severe mechanical problem, for instance, what we call a pathological foot type, which would be an excessively high arch or an extremely flat foot, wearing an over-the-counter insert acts more like a spacer and a shock absorber. But it does nothing to change the abnormal function that may be happening in that foot. So, again, I have no issues with people who like to wear over-the-counter inlays, provided that they don't have an active, you know, orthopedic or biomechanical issue going on at the same time. So, again, not a bad idea, but in the presence of a real problem, such as an Achilles problem or an ankle problem or a heel problem, people make mistakes when they think they could self-treat. And these types of over-the-counter inserts most often will make the problem worse as opposed to better.
As you start to have some kind of problem in your foot or your feet, can that then affect the back, alter the posture tremendously, and then it's a cascading series of problems?
Well, that's one of the things that we are really doing a lot of this research on. And actually, one of the papers that we're working on looks at the connection between foot problems and what happens with knees, hips, and backs. And, of course, if you're not making contact with the ground effectively, that force that would normally be absorbed through the feet has to go to the next available joint, which is then the knee, which is then the hip, which is then the back. But the bigger issue is that, remember, these joints, the knee, the hip, and the back, were not built for shock absorption. They were built for also movement. So they have to assume a whole different role. And what happens when that happens over time is that you start to develop these overuse injuries. For instance, one of my colleagues here at the Hospital for Special Surgery, he's the chief of primary sports care. His name is Dr. Brian Halpern. Dr. Halpern has done a lot of work in this area, and he's observed the direct connection between people who have also a flat arch and those who go on to develop what they call medial knee arthritis. Because what happens when the arch is collapsing in, the amount of force that goes up to the knee is unfortunately, you know, doubled and tripled. It goes up, you know, at a rate where it can cause issues with knees, cartilage, joints, ligaments, the whole thing. So again, more and more of my colleagues here at Hospital for Special Surgery are appreciating the importance of when a foot and ankle does not work the way it's supposed to be working, it can adversely affect particularly the knee, the hip, and the back.
Is there anything that you can do if you have badly sprained an ankle and then that ankle continues to roll and you keep re-spraining and re-spraining it? Can you fix that?
Well, again, there's two theories here. I mean, the most important thing is to try to stabilize the ankle. There are numerous ligaments and tendons that go around the ankle joint. In cases where there's severe laxity, which means no matter how you position that ankle, the ankle still turns in, there are surgical procedures that are done by our orthopedic surgical colleagues to help tighten up the joint, so to speak, okay? Mm-hmm. But often, by stabilizing it with the right type of a prosthetic, whether it be a brace or a prescription orthotic, often we'll do the same thing, where it'll stabilize the ankle to the point where it prevents it from going either excessively to the inside or excessively to the outside. But again, that's really something that requires judgment over time.
Mm-hmm. And I've been reading in preparation for you coming. I was online reading all kinds of articles. It was pretty interesting. And one of the things I came upon was this idea that for people with high arches where the foot, I don't know, tends to, I don't know, does it pronate? Does it, whatever it does, the ankle can roll easily. And so they said for people who have high arches, the worst thing you could buy is clogs.
Well, yeah, because, right, because what happens, what it does, it accentuates the high arch. And people who have what they call a cavus foot, C-A-V-U-S, as in high arch, they tend to be more prone to developing, number one, ankle sprains, number two, heel problems, and number three, Achilles problems. And that's a classic example right there. So wearing the right types of shoe is very important. Now, people also ask about, well, when is it good to wear a flat shoe versus a heel shoe? Well, we find that probably an inch and a half heel is really quite good for balancing all the mechanical aspects of the lower leg. It protects the heel, it protects the plantar fascia, it protects the Achilles tendon. People tend to get into problems, Faith, when they wear a flat shoe and they decide they're going to go walk 5 to 10 miles. That's a problem.
And so you have this issue, you know, as styles change about, you know, people will say, I don't want to look old. I want to look stylish. Everybody's wearing flats, which is so great because you don't have to wear heels when you're going out to dress. People are juggling all this stuff.
Well, exactly. And the problem is that who knows who to believe who. That's the problem. And I think that's an important thing, too, about the public. Be careful where you get your information from. I mean, a lot of these magazines and these journals and these newspapers, they mean well, but quite often the information they give you is not correct. And I think you have to be careful, again, where you get your information. I mean, reading websites and reading this, I mean, they're all important and they have some value. But at the end of the day, you really cannot, you know, underestimate the value of healthcare professionals who particularly study and train in these areas. I think that's a big mistake that people will sometimes make. I mean,
what are you thinking about? What's the big myth that goes around that drives you crazy?
Well, the big thing is, I mean, I'm always reading things about, as I said, plantar fasciitis, and you're a perfect example of what we were talking about, okay? And I think it's important that you realize that heel pain can be the result of many things, as I mentioned. It could be mechanical, it could be traumatic, it could be, God forbid, a neoplastic, i.e. tumors. It could be from the lower extremity, meaning the spine. I think it's important that you don't just say, oh, yeah, my heel hurts, I have plantar fasciitis, let me go stretch it. Well, Faith, you're a really smart gal. I mean, you could say this firsthand. If you have a tear in your plantar fascia and you stretch your plantar fascia in the morning, what are you doing?
Increasing the tear.
Exactly. And I cannot tell you, I see probably 20 to 30 patients a month who've come to me, said, oh, yeah, I went to my physical therapist or I went to my Pilates instructor. They told me to stretch in the morning. And guess what? They had a plantar fascia tear. And what were they basically doing? They were making the plantar fasciitis not become plantar fasciitis anymore, but an actual full-thickness plantar fascia tear, which, as you know firsthand, is not the most pleasant thing in the world to have to walk around with.
No. Okay, so this is New York City Foot Doctor Rock Positano. His practice is devoted to solving foot problems without surgery. He's posted at our website right now. We have other foot health stories posted there, and you can listen to this podcast anytime. Go to WNPR.org and search the Faith Middleton Show. All right, what about running shoes? We'll get to walking shoes in just a second, but how do you know what the right running shoe is for you?
Again, a lot of it has to do with the foot type. There are certain sneakers that are very good for high arches, certain sneakers that are very good for a lower arch or a flat arch. That really is a professional call, right? And I think that's an important thing that people have to realize.
What's the name of the kind of sneaker? I'm not talking about brands now, but you use a term for the kind of sneaker, say, with someone with high arches.
Well, I think the important thing is we call it a neutral.
Neutral, that's it, yeah.
Neutral meaning that you use the natural contour of a person's foot to sort of judge what you're going to do and how you think you're going to make a person wear the type of sneaker or shoe that they're thinking about wearing.
And what about someone who has flat feet?
A flat foot, again, you're going to probably want to do something orthopedically to stabilize it, so you may want to also get a neutral sneaker as well because you want to be able to accommodate that foot functionally to make sure that it works properly.
So you
and remember.
Can, oh, sorry. Go ahead.
of faith. And one of the things, you know, you talk about orthotics, you know, everyone says, well, you know, they do this, they do that, they work, they don't work. Well, the problem is that not all orthotics are created equal. That's the important thing. Making an orthotic has nothing to do with stepping in foam, stepping on a mat. It really has to do with the doctor or the examining clinician understanding what the biomechanical nature and needs of a particular patient are. So when people say to me, well, you know what, I did this, I did that, I mean, I can go here and get this done and get that done, it's not about that. There's a science to knowing how to prescribe an orthotic. And one of the things about the podiatric medical schools and the podiatric medical training around the country is that these are things that we're trained in. We know what materials to use. Do we use a rigid material? Do we use a soft material? We know what angles to use. Do we put something in the heel? So what I'm really trying to say is that it's not just a serendipitous type of a thing. And I think it's important that the public realize that in the presence of underlying problems, mechanically or otherwise, a professional evaluation by people who really understand the nature of the beast is really the way to go.
Huh, yeah, I see that. I really do. So we're going to see a lot of people exercising, over-exercising this time of year to make up for some damage during the holidays. So let's get into that. It strikes me that one of the things that's going to happen, and maybe you see a lot of people maybe a couple months into this season, where people have over-exercised or stressed the feet. Is that right?
Pretty much now, you know, of course, the New Year's resolution is I want to lose 30 pounds. But I want to lose 30 pounds in 2 weeks. So what do you basically do is you increase your exercise time dramatically. You increase your mileage dramatically. I mean, we see this around the marathon, around October, when people are trying to get up to that 26.3 miles. They'll suddenly go from jogging 10 miles to 20 miles. And, of course, bone is very dynamic. You have to be able to train bone to be able to work. So it's the same thing with this time of the year, January and February. People will tend to overdo it. They'll run every day. They'll do 5 miles instead of 1 mile. And the next thing you know, they develop overuse problems in the form of tendon issues or ligament issues or heel or bone. So it's really important to realize that, you know, you have to go nice and easy. You can't overdo it.
Okay, so that's important. Now, what happens about people changing sneakers often enough? Do we do that, and is that a problem for our feet?
Again, that should be based upon a person's activity level. If a person runs 5 or 6 times a week, I think it's a good idea to change the sneaker every 6 months. I mean, if they're a 1 or a 2 a week, you can get a year out of it, but it depends on what type of activity we're speaking about. If it's long distance, if it's short distance, if it's racket sports such as tennis or squash, basketball, court sports, things like that. Again, these are issues that should be discussed with your healthcare professional. This is not something that you should go to a sneaker store and have a person who works behind the counter tell you, oh, this is what you need to do. Step on our device here. We'll tell you how to run. These are things that are important that really need to be figured out. There is no quick fix for something like this. You have to understand the nature of the beast, what's going on with a person's particular issues, what type of activity they're doing, and, of course, understanding the mechanics of their foot type. That's why it's so important that you get a professional input. Now, again, when we send patients to sneaker stores, we actually tell them what to buy. This is what we want you to get. So that there's no problem with that. Because in the past, when we would send a patient to a particular store, they would go there and they would be sold this whole other thing. Like, well, you know, you need to have neutral balance. You need to have, you know, roll bar control. And next thing you know, it caused more problems than it did good. So, again, there's a whole ethos to this. Take nothing for granted, okay, and make sure that you seek the advice of professionals who are specifically trained in this area.
And when your feet start to hurt every day, at what point do you say, this is a problem I have to see somebody about?
I think you should give everything anywhere from 3 to 4 weeks. I think if you don't see resolution within 3 to 4 weeks, then it's time to have it looked at by a professional. That's probably the rule of thumb.
Okay. I've encountered people who will say they trip with the same foot every time, you know, going upstairs. What is that from?
Well, a lot of times it has to do with balance, but quite often we like to think that the body is completely 50-50, even and even. You know, many people have what they call limb length inequalities, which means one leg is longer or shorter than the other. that can cause a lot of problems. It can cause foot problems. It can cause knee problems, hip problems, and back problems. So quite often, if a person has a limb length issue, it could affect their balance, affect their ability to exercise, their ability to walk up and down stairs. That's always something that we're on the lookout for here. I mean, we use quite extensively the limb length gait analysis lab here at Hospital for Special Surgery because they have such a sophisticated, precise, and accurate way of measuring whether or not a person's leg is either longer or shorter than the other.
Yeah, and I'm thinking that we see when people have hip surgery, sometimes there'll be a length differential from the old hip to the new hip, and so there's a bit of a limp that continues after, you know, people are limping around because they're in pain from the surgery that seems to be now permanent. And so I bet that's a time when people should go in and get checked.
Well, again, when you're doing any type of a joint replacement, whether it be a knee or a hip, I mean, one of the things that I know our surgeons here at Special Surgery do is they always take a look and check to make sure that the foot function is at least where it should be. And in cases where they see that there's a difference of some type, which can happen to no matter who, then they'll usually refer them to either the limb length lab or the gait analysis lab or to our particular service just to see if it requires any other type of intervention.
We're going to take a break in just a second, but what's the problem if you don't do that? If you just walk with a slight limp and say, well, that's okay. I had this injury, I had this surgery, and that's just the pushback from that.
I think the important thing to remember is that if it affects your balance, if it affects your stability, if it makes a person unsteady, then I think it has to be evaluated and corrected to the point where it doesn't become an issue. But, yes, again, not everyone walks a straight line. I mean, that happens. But if it's starting to interfere with balance, as I said, and your ability to walk comfortably, then you have to have it looked at and evaluated.
All right, Dr. Rock Positano, stay right where you are. We're going to continue our conversation about health and feet and posture and surgery and all the stuff that's going on. So don't go away.
Found me a brand new box of matches.
So much for listening. I'm Faith Middleton with Dr. Rock Positano, our guest, New York City foot doctor. And I want to also thank our producers, Lori Mack and Jonathan McNichol, and Marion Roy for handling the phones and working on our show. We appreciate that so much, our volunteer associate producer. All right, Rock Positano is in New York. He has a practice devoted to solving foot problems without surgery, and we have posted information about him at our website with lots of foot health stories. And, of course, you can listen to this as a podcast anytime or pass it on to a friend. Go to WNPR.org and search The Faith Middleton Show. Rock, what's a good everyday shoe? How do you judge that?
I think it's important, Faith. One of the issues that people will find themselves in is that they'll tend to try to fit a shoe in the morning. And in the morning, the foot is not swollen because obviously you haven't been walking and standing all day. So I think it's really important to realize that it's probably best to fit a shoe in the early to middle afternoon. Okay, because by that point, the foot is already swollen, and it's a better indicator of how that foot is really working. And the other problem we find, too, is that there was a study that was done some years ago where they found that almost 90% of a particular population were wearing shoes that were 1 to 2 sizes smaller than their actual foot size. So I think we run into a problem also when we're dealing with shoes, because many of us think that, you know, at age 45, we're going to have the same shoe size as we do at age 20. And clearly that's not the case. So I always find that to be very intriguing here, particularly at our practice at Special Surgery, where I'll always ask a patient, well, when was the last time you actually had your foot measured?
Well, what does it do? Does it grow or shrink? What?
Well, in most cases, it usually grows. I mean, they found basically that during pregnancy, during the first trimester of pregnancy, a woman's foot size may increase by a half a size to a full size due to the fact that there's a hormone called relaxin that's produced during the first trimester. Often the foot will splay a lot more. We also find, Faith, that when people either, you know, gain or lose weight, it can affect their shoe size. It can affect the width of their foot, so to speak. And I think that's a real problem that we have to focus in on, is really making sure that a person has their foot measured at a relatively decent interval. I think waiting 10 to 15 years to measure someone's foot's probably not a good idea. But I remember reading that study, and I was absolutely fascinated by that. I said, oh, my goodness, you know, yes. I mean, 90%, almost 90% of the populations they study were wearing shoes that were one to two sizes smaller than their actual foot.
And this was an aesthetic decision, obviously. People afraid that their feet would look too big.
Exactly, and I think that's one of the issues. And I guess people don't realize that, like other body parts, I mean, you know, your feet do change. As I mentioned earlier during our conversation, that, you know, what happens with a foot is that the foot changes over time. And this is not just women. This is men. Men have the same issues. They'll say, well, gee, I haven't had my shoe size change in the last 20 years. And in the meantime, you're looking at their foot. You see they've developed a horrible bunion, or they're developing problems with their heel, and you wonder, well, what's causing this? So I think a really important consideration here is that it's really important that people start to get their foot measured at normal intervals. I think every 1 to 2 years is not a bad idea, just to check.
What is a bunion? And can you correct it without surgery?
Well, again, a bunion is basically in the big toe. There's a joint there. And what happens over time, you get a little wear and tear. And what happens, that big toe becomes, unfortunately, a little bit more enlarged in response to the extra stress that a person is subjecting that foot to. And bunions are funny. In the point that it depends on what's going on. If a bunion is not symptomatic, if it does not bother you, leave it alone. I always tell our patients here at the Hospital for Special Surgery, if it doesn't need fixing, don't fix it. It becomes a problem if it becomes painful and severely arthritic. In cases like that, you know, if we've exhausted non-surgical options and it doesn't work, then there's no issues with referring them to our surgical foot and ankle service to take a look at the many ways that you could correct the bunion surgically. But again, when a person has a bunion, right away they think, oh, I have to have it operated on. That is not a good idea, because you need that big toe to be able to push yourself forward. Mm. That big toe is responsible for pushing a person forward when they're walking. It's also important for stabilizing the foot against the ground. It's important for balance. So again, if it's not severely painful, if it's not severely arthritic, if it's not bothering you, leave it alone.
Okay. Now when you have people come in and you look and you see it, I've got a high arch here, or I've got a flat foot. I forget what you call it. Is that a pathological foot? What is it?
A pathological foot type, yeah.
So if you have something like that and you say, so for you, we need an orthotic in there to help your foot do whatever it's supposed to do so that you can be, your feet can be at their best and you won't run into other problems. How do you decide? You were talking about how, you know, it's like the art of prescribing medicine. It's the art of how to do that orthotic. But how are you measuring what?
Well, I think you have to look at what's happening from that foot type. If a person is developing tendonitis in their mid part of their ankle, that usually means that that arch may be too flat and you're putting more stress on it. If they're developing knee arthritis or hip arthritis because they're not absorbing their force properly or they're not absorbing the shock properly, it's the same thing that requires intervention. But, you know, as recently as a year and a half ago in the very, very prestigious International Foot and Ankle Journal that's published pretty much all over the world, they did a study showing that for kids under 18 who had a flat arch that was not in any way addressed, that over 90% of these kids wound up to develop before age 18 knee problems and lower back problems.
Really?
So what does that tell you? That tells you that there's clearly that link that's not only found in people who are over 25 or 30, but also kids that are under 18. So I always find it amusing when pediatricians will tell, you know, the parents of a kid that has a really pancake flat foot, well, they'll outgrow it. There's no such thing as outgrowing a flat foot. I think what you have to realize is that you have to make sure that that flat foot does not become pathological to the point where the tendons are overworked, the heel is overworked, and the knees are overworked. But just that correlation, though, Faith, between that flat arch and knee tracking problems and lower back pain, that's pretty significant.
And flip-flops.
Flip-flops, again, absolutely positively no support. I mean, if you have bad knees or a bad hip or a bad back and you wear flip-flops for more than an hour or two, that's the quickest way to ruin your vacation.
Well, but what about young people? So do they get a get-out-of-jail-free card on this because
they're
young?
No, they don't, because we see a lot of kids who have a flat arch who wear a flip-flop who wound up developing shin splints and heel pain and knee pain and hip pain. So unfortunately, nobody's exempt. Everybody, if they have the issues that make a foot type pathological, if you do things like wear a completely non-supportive shoe, such as a fit flop, you're asking for trouble.
Okay, and I want to get to these shoes that were created that had, you know, that rock. The back is sort of cut off a little bit, and it kind of tilts you back, whether those are a good idea or not. But we've got a call, 203-776-9677, to talk to Dr. Rock Positano. 203-776-9677. Andy, welcome to the show. Andy, go ahead.
Hey. Hi, Faith.
Hi.
Hello, Doctor. Faith, I'm your cherry pie guy, but I'm not talking about cherry pies today.
Okay, hi.
How are you?
Great,
I'd like to thank my mother and father for noticing a problem with my feet when I was about 8 or 9 years old, and I was curious to know if there are a lot of these problems out there. And this is where when you walk, either you walk with both feet protruding out, one to the right and left to the left, or in some cases, my case, where I walked and my left foot, you know, was like a duck. You know, I walked like a duck. And they brought me to a podiatrist, and he corrected it. And I'm so appreciative of it because I see so many people. I notice this all the time when I look at people's feet, and either they're walking with their, you know, left foot way out or the right foot way out, or in some cases, both feet where they look like they're walking like a duck.
Well, Andy,
is that a serious problem? Do you see that a lot?
Andy, I love this question because it gets to whether in nature, there's tremendous variety in nature, you know, to what extent is this just typical of a particular individual, and when should we correct something? Rock, what do you say?
Well, again, that's, you know, Andy, that's a very good observation, and clearly, you know, you're right about your parents being alert. And I think more and more parents should really look at the way their kids walk. And if they see that they're turning in or their hips are turning in or their feet are turning in or turning out, they should really have that evaluated because quite often that can lead to knee and hip problems. We see that a lot with our younger population. And these kids can develop, you know, tendonitis of their hip, or they could develop shin splints. So I think it's important at an early stage, again, when someone's going to tell you that your kid is going to outgrow something, that is not the answer you need to hear. You need to say, hey, listen, let me take a look at this. Let me have this evaluated by either, you know, pediatric orthopedic professionals or pediatric podiatric professionals. But the bottom line should be that no one is a better observer of your kids than you. Period. You're with them all day. You see them. You see them run. You see them walk. You see them have fun. It's important that parents really step it up and start to really look at their kids' feet.
Thank you so much, Andy.
Thank you, Faith.
You're welcome. Take care. Dr. Rock Positano is a New York foot doctor, and his practice is called the Non-Surgical Foot and Ankle Service at New York Presbyterian Hospital. And this is a practice that believes in trying to find every means to avoid surgery, if at all possible. Of course, it can't be avoided all the time, but if it's at all possible, that's what Dr. Positano's specialty is. So overlapping toes, what causes that? Is that just a genetic thing, or should you attend to that? What is that?
again, overlapping toes could be genetic. It could be, developmental. It could be from trauma. Again, Faith, the important thing here is that if the problem or the issue affects a person's balance and their ability to stand and to walk comfortably, then it should be evaluated for other types of interventions. I mean, whether it be conservative or surgical. I mean, again, we see that quite a bit. But again, a lot of people who have overlapping toes don't have any issues with balance, and they'll say the same thing, like, what should we do? Well, first question I ask is that, is it affecting your ability to walk? Is it affecting your balance? Is it affecting your ability to participate in recreational activities? And if the answer is no, guess what? Leave it alone.
Mm-hmm. How about these shoes that are sort of called rockers, where the back is slightly cut off and it tilts you backward? The whole marketing campaign has to do with how people used to walk in the prehistoric times.
Right. Well, Faith, it's like when they had this whole thing about barefoot running, and this and that. You know, and everyone says, well, you know, the caveman used to do this all the time. But I once posed a question. I said, well, can I ask you a question? What was the usual age that the average caveman lived to be? They never live past age 20, so how could you know what could possibly happen over time? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think the whole thing about barefoot running is kind of dangerous, because we see people develop stress fractures. We see people tear their heels. We see people mess up their metatarsal heads. And again, I think that's really, an important thing to also look into. I mean, because barefoot running, barefoot this, barefoot that, I mean, it's okay around the pool, but do I recommend running, a marathon barefoot? That's probably not a good idea.
What about walking and running in the sand?
Same thing. Unbelievably stressful. If you have a tight Achilles tendon, you run the risk of injuring your Achilles, injuring your plantar fascia, even sometimes splitting your calf. You have to be careful, because running in the sand, it actually causes the foot to overwork. It really is quite a workout. But again, if you have any of these predisposing factors, if you have a history of Achilles problems or calf problems or heel pain, it's pretty dangerous. Probably not a good idea.
Are there companies that make shoes that are kind of stylish, but are built in such a way that it's foot-friendly?
Again, you'll find there. I mean, I love Merrells. Merrells are great. I think they're a great shoe because they're well balanced. And again, I'm not under any contract by Merrell. I just happen to see so many people who wear them, and I find them to be a really great recreational shoe, because patients are comfortable in them. They're good arch support. They're good heel support. I've seen New Balance sneakers tend to be very, very good, especially their neutral one. Because it's got a nice firm arch, it's got a good heel to toe, organization, where there's a nice even pattern between the heel to the toe. Again, you'll find lace up shoes tend to be very good too, because lace up shoes tend to be more supportive because of the lacing.
Mm.
Again, it really has to do with comfort.
Uh-huh. So it has to do with comfort, but also, isn't support an issue? People have certain kinds of foot issues, like, say, high arch, and so therefore the ankle's unstable or can tend to be. So isn't that why laces can be important, or the boot is important?
Well, again, the laces are important because, as you mentioned, they help to stabilize that foot better. And it actually helps to keep the foot in a more anatomically correct position, where from a mechanical point of view, that foot is able to shock absorb far more effectively. And that's an important consideration, considering that, as I mentioned earlier, the average person will make contact with the ground, anywhere from 15,000 to 20,000 times a day.
Okay, quick question. When you get up and you're walking around the house, should you never walk barefoot, or should you always put slippers on?
No, it's okay around the house, I mean, I think that's important around the house.
Oh,
is one thing.
Gotta run.
I think people get into more of a problem if they decide they're going to go walk 5 or 6 miles outside of their house.
That's good advice for right now. Thank you, Rock Positano.
Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure, my friend.
Opportunity to speak with you, Faith.
Us too. Thank you for your advice. And he is in New York City at New York Presbyterian, and it's called the Non-Surgical Foot and Ankle Service. And he's at our website, wnpr.org. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.